As the Trump administration begins to hum and churn on all cylinders one day into his tenure, the left is grimly digging down into a 4 to 8 year period of resistance, criticism, hate, and total war against Trump and his ideas. As one outlandish claim and yet another rolls out of the disinformation and propaganda machine, many Americans are beginning to wonder where it will all end. And as the conservative past meets the recent postmodern future, we are all beginning to ponder whether our society will last as a peaceful enterprise and undertaking. As the fascist left rears up, roars, and shows its fangs full of hatred and poison that cannot be staunched. Oh, good morning, Kelly here, and it is the 24th, and I've really been paying a lot of attention to the tenor and the tone of what's going on, and this implacable fury from the left. And I think it was kind of summed up in this incident that happened on this plane where the lady saw, some old lady was sitting on the plane, and she looked over and saw that there was a Trump, somebody, I guess, with a Trump hat on or whatever it was. And she started to complain and said, "He's here to rub it in. And I don't see why I need to sit near him," and such. And so they called over the help on the plane, the stewardesses, and they came up and talked to her and said, basically, and she said, I need him to be moved to some other seat. And they basically said, that's not your call, ma'am. And so, well, she said, well, you're not morally superior just because you won. And she goes, by the way, gravity is a law, you know, or gravity, you know, gravity's just a theory, whatever she said. And I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, you know, these people are really, they're unfit for leadership because they can't get along with anybody else. It reminds me of Islam. Islam cannot coexist with any other belief system, and liberalism can't coexist with, I'm speaking, of course, of far leftism, not the kind of liberalism that the general listeners of this show would believe in. But, you know, true leftism has a fury and a hatred of any other belief system because it sees it as totally ignorant and lacking in goodwill. And so this lady, anyway, I've got this clip right here, but I'm thinking, you know, is this going to be 4 to 8 years of this? Because the people on the right may not be perfect, but they learned to adapt to Obama. They might have fought back, they might have resisted, but it wasn't a complete culture war, you know, culture Kampf, as the Germans call it. It was just kind of biding time, treading water until we had a shot. And it seems like these people in the far left are so arrogant and they're so convinced of their ideas. And it's not just like gravity. It's not an opinion. It's a law out of the universe. But here's this lady on this plane. And this was I think it was first shared on the American Mirror, but it's only been out a few days.
I mean, just for sitting down this seat saying that I came here to celebrate today.
Is there going to be a problem?
I would like for him to change me to someone.
No, I'm going to get somebody. Well, you don't have that right. Well, I will get somebody to come and talk.
You pretend you have a moral high ground, but you put Batman's finger on the knee of your butt. Batman doesn't believe in climate change.
You believe. You believe that you have the moral high ground, but you're the one who put the man in the office who has his finger on the nuclear buttons, and he doesn't believe, and she puts up air quotation marks. He doesn't believe in global warming. So, you know, I realize the Democratic Party is kind of badly wounded right now, but I don't see them you know, you've got to put a little effort, unless you can force people to join your movement like Islam does. I don't see how they're going to talk people back into this. It doesn't seem like far leftism is advanced. It seems like it's very primitive. But here's this continuing on. Now, this air marshal, or I don't know if it's an air marshal or a steward, shows up. Did you know that gravity is just a theory? I'm going to have to take you off the plane right now. They've identified her as someone who has picked a fight with somebody else and is not backing down. Basically saying, I need you to get your stuff. I'm sitting here. I paid for this. He is in my space.
She's called the hostility.
I'm going home. My mother-in-law, his mother, died. He had to be. I'm going home. There is no way I'm getting home.
I'm going home. I'm sorry the audio quality is so bad, but this is off of a phone video. She says she reaches over to, I guess, her son, that his mother-in-law has died. I'm going home. There's no way I'm getting off of this plane. All right, so she refuses to get off the plane, so they call the police. I'm going into home, and I'm going to be sleeping in my own bed tonight. I'm going home to bury the mother-in-law. I guess it's her husband. My husband lost his mother. Have some respect. My husband lost his mother, but I'm going to pick a fight and then I'm not going to get off the plane. She gets up to leave. She gets up to leave, and her husband gets up to leave.
Fans are waiting on you.
Everybody's waiting on her. Everybody's waiting on her. The police are standing next to her. The entire plane collapses. She goes off. So anyway, this is this approach to fighting for your beliefs, which is, I wrote a little note here. It is incivility as moral punishment. So this is something that has long been associated with the left, is if the left picks up an idea and somebody else opposes it, then they have every right to harass, insult, and attack the people who believe in the things that they're opposed to, which is very strange, but it must be fun, you know, to come up. And so there was this other situation that occurred that you may have heard of. which was Ivanka Trump getting attacked by this guy on the plane. And I just have a summary of this right here, but here it is right here.
This is Ivanka Trump looking rattled after an angry passenger accosted her on a commercial flight, telling her, "Your father is ruining the country."
Apparently, one passenger was hurling insults at Ivanka Trump.
Shame on the person who harassed them. I don't care how you feel about, you know, Donald Trump.
JetBlue removed the passenger, lawyer Dan Goldstein, before the flight took off from New York's JFK Airport Thursday morning. Ivanka was traveling to Hawaii with her husband, Jared, and other family members. Goldstein's spouse, college professor Matthew Lassner, tweeted a play-by-play of the confrontation. Ivanka and Jared at JFK flying commercial. My husband chasing them down to harass them. Then, Ivanka and Jared on our flight. My husband expressed displeasure in a calm tone. JetBlue staff overheard, and they kicked us off the plane. He also posted the photo of Ivanka. Ivanka just before JetBlue kicked us off our flight, when a flight attendant overheard my husband expressing displeasure about flying with Trump's Washington Post columnist Emily Heil.
In some ways, she's such a proxy for Donald.
So anyway, they get this guy. You may have heard of this story already, but so these people on the left think that they have the right to do, I mean, basically anything that they want to. Anything that they want to, if you disagree with them, and it was like, what's that guy's name, the George Clooney, when he found out that Charlton Heston had Alzheimer's, he basically got up and cheered and said it serves him right because he supports gun rights. And think about how sad that is, but I mean, it is. The far left cannot get along with other people. And that's all there is to it. I've got a little thing here from Tucker Carlson on this clip, but I think it's a good one. Let me take a break here. Have a little more Frank Sinatra for you. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, M1455-23-1450. So great to spend some time with you this morning. And 805-6180. I think I might have my text phone in the car, but here's a little bit. The best is yet to come. A salute to Donald and his new administration.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started in to hum. Still, it's a real good bet the best is yet to come.
Well, we've got some stuff going on. I want to keep you up on it. I'm going to skip that interview with Tucker Carlson, although it is entertaining, because I want to be able to keep you up on the latest that is happening in the Trump presidency. And that includes, got some clips here from Fox News, that includes the signing of executive orders that is occurring. Obviously, you know, everybody knew it was going to happen pretty fast. It's kind of even faster out of the block than we thought. Some people thought, here is a list of Trump's executive orders with Shepard Pie Smith.
Now, she's the White House correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. I think I saw you in there. You were in the room, weren't you, Carol?
I was, yeah.
So first day after all the histrionics, if you will, on Saturday, yesterday, your thoughts on day one in Spicer's briefing room?
I thought he set the tone very early on, almost immediately when he came out and kind of made a joke. He said that he had spoken to his predecessor, Josh Earnest, and who was voted the most liked press secretary by reporters, and he said that he assured him that he would not lose that title anytime soon based on what he had done over the weekend. So he was very kind of conciliatory. He took questions for almost an hour and 15 minutes. That's a pretty long briefing. He called on a number of reporters. He mixed it up a little bit. He didn't start in the traditional way that press secretaries have started for a long time, by calling on the Associated Press and then moving basically through the front couple of rows and then getting a few questions in the back. He moved all over the room. He just didn't know some of the people he was calling on, clearly, which is a little different. But he took a bunch of questions, and he also, you know, tried to clarify some of what he said on Saturday about President Trump's inauguration crowds.
What's the mood around there, Carol?
It's a little chaotic from on the press corps. You know, everyone's kind of running around trying to file is jam-packed in there. And the mood in the White House is they seem to be really kind of excited to start getting things going. They've taken a number of different policy steps today and have a very specific plan for the rest of the week. And so they seem kind of intent on drilling down on doing those things. It's a much different feeling than I was here over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday, and they seem to be focused a little bit less on the fight that they were having over the president's crowds at his inauguration and a little bit more on what the work that they have to do and some of the promises that he made.
Well, it felt to a great degree that they got down to substance today. And whether you agree with Donald Trump's points or not is really immaterial. These are the things that he said he was going to do, and here on day one, they're being done. So at least on that point, I mean, I don't know how you argue with it.
Yeah, well, and you heard Sean Spicer say that there'll be a number of other things that the president does this week.
I don't think this is really on the topic of what he signed. So here I've got another little clip here from CBS that will fill you in. And President Trump signs executive orders on trade, abortion, and jobs.
Is in Arlington, Virginia. Eli, so what do you make of the signing of these executive orders and the president withdrawing the United States from TPP?
Well, he's making good on a lot of campaign promises. I mean, also this comes at a time, you know, the lawsuits swirling, the CIA and intelligence community's investigation of the Trump campaign's dealings with Russia, all these things are still swirling around him as he enters office. And so I think what he's trying to do here is follow through on a promise to take action on day one. And he's doing it really to satisfy the core constituencies that put him in the office. The Mexico City, you know, the abortion thing, that is something that every Republican has done, and every Democrat has reinstated the funding for the overseas organizations that do go to provide abortions. So that's really sort of an easy thing that this president can do to show the social conservatives and evangelicals who voted for him that, look, I'm with you on the question of abortion. With trade was maybe one of the top two, not maybe, was one of the top two, and maybe the top motivating issue for Trump voters that really expanded his appeal across a lot of the Rust Belt, with his workers who really felt in a globalizing economy that no matter how hard they work, they can't get ahead. So he campaigned on pulling out of TPP. He campaigned against NAFTA. And even though these are largely symbolic gestures here on Monday morning at the White House, they do show that he is delivering for those constituencies. And he's doing so, you know, he said he would change the way Washington worked. So the hiring freeze is part of that. So this is Donald Trump following through on a lot of the campaign rhetoric, sort of plucking the lowest hanging fruit in terms of executive orders, and doing so at a time when there are a lot of other controversies swirling, including that that has been sparked by his own press secretary's mendacity, brazen mendacity on Saturday night. And so before the briefing, he's sort of giving reporters other things to ask Sean Spicer about in terms of the agenda that this administration will set that will probably help, you know, put Donald Trump and the narrative around this new administration a little bit more on track in terms of where the West Wing wants it to be.
And we'll certainly be looking for that briefing, which should happen within the half hour. Eli, I got to ask you, it's a busy day for the president. Later this evening, he's going to welcome a bipartisan group of congressional leaders to the White House. It's his first gathering with them since taking the oath of office. What do you expect the focus to be on as this new administration sets out to pursue their agenda like they did this morning?
Well, I think that, you know, Democrats have said, look, if there are areas where we agree with the president can work with him, we will work with him. And one of those is infrastructure, clearly. That's really a priority that this president seems to have that aligns more closely with a Democratic agenda than a Republican one. Republicans have not been all that excited about the idea of spending $1 billion on infrastructure projects. So I think the progressive groups at the White House will probably talk a little bit about that. There'll be some back and forth, I would guess, on tax reform and certainly on Obamacare. Trump, you know, he kind of, you know, goes whichever way the wind is blowing in terms of the statements that he makes and the interviews that he gives. But, you know, there have been a lot of mixed signals on what he's going to do related to Obamacare in terms of whether any sort of replacement that comes from Congress and that he signs into law actually, you know, offers coverage for everybody or just access to coverage. I think the there'll be a lot of negotiating and discussion of that, because I think that is clearly tops on the president and on Congress's agenda, right?
All right. So he got rid of foreign abortion. You know, what does it say about the Democratic Party that it is so committed to abortion that they can't even allow these women in this women's march to take part if they're not pro-abortion? I think that is kind of crazy. A little bit nuts. Cutting down on the number of people, the percentage of people who can support you. 631 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces AM 1450, 523 1450. We'll be right back and carry on with, let's see, what else do we have here? I just got a lot of stuff. I want to get back to a little bit of the Women's March and dig into that a little bit more. So we'll be right back to talk about that.
Best is yet to come, and babe, won't that be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine.
Okay, so getting into the Women's March, and here's a little clip on this, but then I have an article that I thought you might find notable that claims that the future of, let me get this right here, the future of the left is female, not just the Democratic Party, which probably tells you something about feminism, that it's not really a woman's movement, or on the alternative, that leftism is becoming a mouthpiece and a symbol for feminism, whatever feminism stands for. But here's a little bit on the momentum of the women's movement and whether it can be sustained.
Who may have been behind sponsoring at least several groups who took part in Saturday's Women's March, marches around the country and here in Washington. Correspondent Peter Ducey tells us it's also unclear whether the anti-Trump movement will go on indefinitely.
More than 3 million Americans spent this Saturday protesting President Trump, according to a pair of professors who did the math. But now there are questions about how this movement is going to maintain momentum, since women weren't just rallying around a single issue.
Reproductive rights are human rights.
We reject the demonization of our Muslim brothers and sisters.
Let's talk about the economy, because that's a woman's issue.
Some conservative critics aren't sure there's enough cohesiveness there to keep bringing big crowds out to protest.
we don't know if this movement's going to be a one-time deal or something that's going to be long-term, because as we know with liberal Democrats at this point, they've lost the direction of their party.
But Democrats argue this kind of broad approach is working.
They were saying that the issues that impact women impact the nation.
The timing of these massive marches was puzzling to the new president, who tweeted, quote, "Watched protests yesterday, but was under the impression that we just had an election. Why didn't these people vote? Celebs hurt cause badly." And later tweeted, "Peaceful protests are a hallmark of our democracy. Even if I don't always agree, I recognize the rights of people to express their views." Their cause has been bankrolled, at least in part recently, by the liberal billionaire George Soros, who's donated millions of dollars to more than 50 of this weekend's participants, including Planned Parenthood, Human Rights Watch, and the NAACP. His group said today there have been false reports about Soros' involvement, adding, quote, "The Open Society Foundations support a wide range of organizations, including those that support women and minorities who have historically been denied equal rights. The Women's March makes a promise on its website, quote, "We work peacefully while recognizing there is no true peace without justice and equality for all." But all were apparently not welcomed on Saturday.
We know of many of these pro-life groups who actually tried to apply. They were accepted at first for the march. And then afterwards, when they found out who these groups were, which were some of them were like life pregnancy centers, they were denied access to go into the march.
It's not clear today either how different the Women's March really was from other marches, because its website is just asking people to print out a blank postcard, write what they're most concerned about, and send it to their senator, which is something just about every protest group asks members to do. Brett?
Peter, thank you.
All right, so the Women's March, what was it? What did it stand for? I got into an argument last night and got a lecture by some lady who went on to tell me it was a worldwide march. I said it was
Ryan Mannion.
I said it was against Trump, wasn't it? And then I was informed that it was pro women and had nothing to do with Trump. And I said, well, I mean, wasn't the motivation for it to show Trump all of these women that are concerned about him and to, you know, teach him some sort of a lesson? And then she backtracked and said, well, of course it's about Trump. So anyway, the future of the left is female. And this is by a lady by the name of Rebecca Traister, New York Magazine points out the size of the march. And according to reports, more than 680,000 in Washington, D.C., women marching, women and men. 750,000 in L.A., 400,000 in New York City, 250,000 in Chicago, 100,000 in Seattle, Denver, San Francisco, Twin Cities, and Portland, Oregon, and crowds of thousands in smaller cities. So, massive, march in the millions in summary, and then there's supposedly some internationally. But what did they want? And so one of the debates that came out was that the pro-life women, as you heard in that last clip, were not supposed to be involved in this march. So they weren't allowed to be in this march. And a lot of them were upset because they wanted to, they wanted to have their say as well. And so if you get rid of the pro-life element, which I think most people understand that feminism is not just an abstract support of women across the board. It is a support of liberal women, and especially women who support abortion. And so you saw when the women were assaulted by Bill Clinton, and how then they were then attacked by the National Organization of Women and other groups, that the feminists are looking to advance their agenda, and their agenda does not have anything to do with the pro-life movement. So, so in any event, my question to you is, what is the purpose of feminism, this feminism that marched? And is feminism, is it an entity? Is it an undertaking? Is it a movement that is pro human? You know, is it pro humans or is it just pro women? Is it even pro women? We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Chris.
Hey, Chris. Good morning. Hope you're well. And what's on your mind?
Yeah, I was listening to your show yesterday, and we were talking about the women's movement and, you know, your question that you have. I think that, you know, the Women's March, I think they're realizing that the extent of the Trump presidency and what he's going to be able to do, plus, you know, with the Supreme Court, the appoints, you know, and in the executive orders that he's doing. So, but I think there's a lot of fear of what he's going to be doing and implementing in the Supreme Court. But you were talking about like the history of feminism, and I've come across some articles or coming across some readings where two individuals that you might want to look up, and one is I think it was Sartre and Beauvoir, Jean-Paul Sartre and Simone du Beauvoir. Have you heard of them?
Yeah, Sartre. You know, the feminist movement goes way before that. The feminist movement was they don't have important parts in it, but the feminist movement was originally some sort of a Christian. I think it was Unitarianism was kind of at the foundation of it. But go ahead, tell us what you know.
Yeah, that these individuals, you know, who definitely held up, you know, Marx, Nietzsche, and also Freud. We had Jean-Paul, who, you know, his emphasis on the freedom aspect that, you know, men, that we all need to be free, that humans are, you know, relationships are hell, marriage is hell. And his love interest, which was Simone, who carried on with that and who started into where, you know, the belief that women are like a second human, you know, they're oppressed because of their maternity instincts.
Yeah.
And so, and then, you know, the pill which came out of Nazi Germany, or actually before the Nazis perfected it and used it, they started using that as well as a tool to eliminate that maternal, so that they could be as free as men.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of in a nutshell. But their impact, you know, which, you know, in the 60s, you know, had a major impact, and I think was a big influence with that feminism.
And so what do you think of the feminist movement now?
I think it's definitely carried on from back in the 60s. But, you know, they carry on the ideas and beliefs, but it just seems like it's taken a life on its own where it's like out of control in a sense. The marches that were done were pretty convoluted. Mixed messages, and I think maybe they probably did that in a sense, trying to incorporate everything else to you know, human rights or whatever, but yet they're trying to put it into this feminism to make it like legit, you know, to make it that, you know, we're standing up for not only like human rights but women's rights and, you know, reproductive rights and so forth. That's what I was taking on it.
Yeah.
But you know, it's pretty disturbing that the behavior, you know, that you would see women out there, the signs, statements, you know, it's pretty disturbing.
Yeah, it is. Well, listen, I'm hard up on a break here, but so what do you think this movement, this women's movement that has been expressed at the beginning of Trump's tenure, is it going to last? Is it going to flourish? Is it going to grow?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like we'll see in the next few months. Of course, you know, Soros has a lot of influence on that as well, and I think they're trying to find ways to disrupt as best they can. So this may be one of those tools that he'll use. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, Chris, thanks for the call. Have a good day.
Thank you.
All right, folks. So do you think feminism is a positive movement? I mean, honestly, it is really, I can't help, you know, I told you that, I think I told you this, that I had looked up, just, I was randomly looked up, I typed in, you know, sometimes you do these searches, I just kind of randomly put in feminism is cancer into the Google, and up pops this, immediately pops this thing. This is right after Bowie died. David Bowie's last words on earth was, feminism is cancer. And I thought, wow, that's kind of interesting. But I see feminism, in my opinion, whatever in the past that you want to attribute whatever growth in society and protection for women and work and everything, not treating them as sex objects, whatever you want to put it into, I see it today as something that is a radical instigator of selfishness, and gives a blanket defense to anything that women want to do. And for that reason, I think it's a very dangerous movement and is anti-human. Now, you might laugh at that, but anyway, here's a little weather for you. And this is out of the West Coast, and then we'll have local weather.
Winter Storm Leo has really just produced a big variety of weather in California. A lot of rain. We even had some hail, like you see there. But the rain has been one of the biggest problems because the flooding has been really intense in some spots, and it's caused a lot of mudslides and landslides. And, of course, we've had a lot of snow up in the high terrain. And from here on out, we're really going to focus on areas east of California, all right? So you guys are done with Winter Storm Leo, which is good news because you need a break from all that precip that's been falling. Even though it's helping the drought, you need a little bit of a break in the short term. Right now, we're going to focus on the next phase of this storm, which is the plains and the Midwest. And as we get deeper into the day, the storm bleeds farther toward the east. So we start off in the plains, Nebraska, South Dakota, Rapid City down toward Lincoln, Grand Island. You guys will be getting some snow throughout the day. And then in the upper Midwest, by the time we get into this evening and overnight, you guys will be in on the snow. So southern Minnesota, a good chunk of Wisconsin, parts of Michigan eventually, and northern Iowa as well. By upper Midwest standards, this won't be a huge snowstorm, but it's definitely going to be impactful, a good solid 5 to 8 inches possible in some of these spots. Up in the northeast, my goodness, the wind has been just crazy. You see some big old waves there on the Jersey Shore. We've had some coastal flooding issues here and there. There's some video from Lindenhurst yesterday. Big time wind. And, you know, it's not that it's just windy outside. It's been causing some damage as well. You've got, you know, a lot of reports of trees down, some brief power outages here and there. As we progress through the day, things are going to get better. Really, the worst of this storm is going to be this morning. And you saw that coastal flooding video that I was showing you. That was from the south shore of Long Island. You see through the morning, we've still got this onshore flow, all right? So parts of Cape Cod, I would say southern New England, you're going to be dealing with some coastal flooding issues for that morning high tide. But as we get deeper into the day, watch what happens. The storm starts to move toward the northeast, and the flow starts to come offshore. So the coastal flooding won't be as bad for that second round of high tides later on this afternoon. But it's going to stay windy all day, maybe gusting up close to 50 or 60 miles an hour in Boston, especially this morning. And by the time we get to early tomorrow morning, the storm is pretty much over. Don't forget, we've still got snow that's going to be falling in the interior northeast. And look at these wind gusts throughout the day. You see a lot of 40s, 50s on that map. So be careful if you're headed out on the roads today. It's going to be very, very windy.
We have a call. Who's this?
This is David. How are you, Kelly?
Good, David. How's it going? And what's on your mind? We got a couple of minutes left.
Okay, when you think of feminism, these are the three faces I put with that. Rosie O'Donnell, Whoopi Goldberg, and Joey Behar.
Disgusting.
That's pretty much, yes. That pretty much says it right there.
If I was going to do a diet center, I'd put that over the refrigerator, those three pictures.
Yeah, that would make you not want to eat anything, or especially it would make you scared of the refrigerator.
Yes.
Saw those three creatures on your refrigerator.
All right, David, anything else?
No, that's it.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day. All right, so
bye.
I'm doing a little research right now. I remembered there was a connection between, there's this really strange thing that happened in American history between Unitarianism, which is Christianity without God, and the temperance movement, which is, you know, getting rid of alcohol and everything. And that was also tied into the progressive movement. Now you hear the term progressive that is connected to leftism. But, you know, if you understood liberalism as defunct or a kind of wayward Christianity, you wouldn't be far, far gone from the truth, because Christianity basically in the church, the Catholic Church, kind of lays out this pattern for how to build liberalism. Liberalism is like Catholicism without a pope, and the pope becomes, you know, without a god, without the pope, and the government becomes the head of the church. But it's interesting how all roads go back to Christianity, and that's something that I've mentioned to you a number of times. But I'm seeing here that they're mentioning the Grimke sisters who were part of the abolition movement to abolish slavery, were also founders of the women's rights movement. And so part of it, the Quaker community. Quakerism is Christianity without the word of God, I guess, in a sense. But anyway, Quakerism is its own thing. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell, I'm Les Cruces, and we'll take a break here and come back and talk about the roots of feminism and what it means now. I am getting a little resistance here. I've got two things playing, but I gotta find the other one. But anyway, great spending time with you this morning in the first hour, and we'll be back.
Best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? Best is yet to come.
Okay, so we were talking a little bit about feminism in the last hour. But let me give you a little break here and bring some headlines to you. Let's see here. you've got, just bringing up the Drudge Report here for headlines, and we've got Art of the Repeal, killing TPP, Trump moving on trade, hiring freeze on federal workers, warning China no more taking of territory, battling Republicans on spending cuts, slashing regulations, business regulations by 75% or more, calling out the fight on terror, winning over union support for his ideas, and changing the White House website to English only, and getting rid of any mention of global warming. Now, Brexit is being voted upon right now in Britain in the Supreme Court, and what they're doing is trying to figure out when and how to institutionalize move into the change to withdraw from the EU. And a conservative Colorado judge is emerging as the top contender to fill the Scalia seat. Marco Rubio is planning on supporting Tillerson. and one-third of Californians want to leave America. Lady Gaga will not be paid for Super Bowl halftime show, which in the people who perform at these things never get paid. It's just a lot of free publicity. One in three Californians now support secession. Homeless are facing a crackdown in L.A. from living in their cars. A group of billionaires from Texas have purchased 200,000 acres in Idaho. And Kellyanne Conway is getting Secret Service protection because of her threats. You know, one of the things that surprised me on these, this gay guy attacked Ivanka Trump on the plane is why she didn't have any security around her. A fight over Donald Trump by an illegal alien. I guess the guy's an illegal alien. Is living with another Hispanic, one Hispanic attacks another over the fear that this guy's going to have to leave, and the guy got his ear bit off where he was staying at his house. Debate over the height of Mount Everest, and they're trying to figure out if it's shrinking. And Israel is approving 2,500 new West Bank settlement homes and signaling a change under Trump. And remember, one of the things that Obama did is he signed in this or allowed this bill to come to the forefront of the United Nations, and they didn't block it. And it was a condemnation of anything in the West Bank, any new homes. It actually invalidated Jews living in Jerusalem. As a matter of fact, it was very bizarre. And one of the things that Obama wanted to lecture the U.S. on, and also the Israelis, is they had no right to build in the West Bank. So now they're ramping up their building. So man robs bank to escape wife. And all right. So those are some of your headlines. Now, there is this, basically, I don't want to put on a bunch of clips on feminism because I find that it's counterproductive, but just to talk about it. So what is feminism? What is feminism to the average person? When you talk to people about feminism, you know, especially say millennials, I don't think there's a lot of open support for feminism as a movement. Now, I believe there is support for the ideals of feminism. Everybody should be paid the same amount for the same amount of work. Everyone should be protected by the law. Sexual harassment is wrong. I mean, all these different ideas that you would associate with feminism, whether they came out of feminism or not, would be basically supported by the average person because we have evolved quite a bit. And you might have heard the lady who's a kind of a Christian talking about the problem, one of the problems with feminism. And she said, one of the problems with feminism, this came from the show yesterday, kind of analyzing the women's movement, was that we have all become feminized in this culture. So I think that, you know, just looking at the history of feminism is one thing, and then I think where it's at now, and then the end goal. So feminism comes out of the abolition movement, or it is associated with the abolition movement being the movement to make illegal slavery. And also an application of the Enlightenment. The Enlightenment was a movement to bring in science and especially rationality and logic. And the chief Enlightenment thinker is John Locke, but the Enlightenment is applied more in probably in France than it is anywhere else. But in any event, this movement that has produced strange fruit, and no pun intended, but one of the unintended or intended benefits of the women's movement is, you know, kind of building up of lesbianism. And, you know, when I was in school, there was a lot of talk that the only appropriate place for a feminist to be was in a relationship with another woman, because only there would she be treated with full equality, and she wouldn't be talked down to, and she wouldn't be, you know, objectified and all this other stuff. The problem with that is that it absolutely atomizes and destroys the family. And, you know, there were women at the time that were arguing that any act of sexual intimacy was rape. So, you know, where do you go from there? So, you know, one of my questions is, and it, you know, feminism seems to have a coarsening effect on manners, on attitudes, on activity. And so the question is, what is the rational outcome of feminism? And it would seem to me to be a matriarchy. Now, I had mentioned this article that was presented in the New York Magazine called The Future of the Left is Female. And so that would mean, if this writer was correct, that feminism is really not a human rights movement. It is a political movement. It is another, and I would say, I would go farther and say it's another face of liberalism, and it is not fundamentally concerned with the furtherance of the human race, because one of the main objectives for furthering the human race is to continue procreation. And feminism treats procreation as one of the interests or hobbies of women as they go to assert themselves and establish themselves in their careers and as individuals. And so there has always been a kind of an ambivalent or even antagonistic reaction of feminism to motherhood and to marriage and husbands and everything. So if we're going to create a matriarchy, if that is the direction that feminism is heading, and feminism is obviously an enormous element in leftism, what do matriarchies look like would be my question. And let's take a little break here. It's kind of an interesting topic, isn't it? We'll take a little break here and come back and try to answer that. What is a matriarchy? If the future of the left is female, then the left seeks to be a matriarchy. So what is a matriarchy? We'll be right back to discuss that. 716 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. Call up if you're a feminist and you want to put on record your defense and your embrace of it.
They call you Lady Luck, but there is room for doubt. At times you have a very unladylike way of running out. You're on this date with me. The pickings have been lush. And yet before this evening is over, you might give me the brush.
All right. So if the women that are pushing this women's movement to attack Trump and put him in his place, and as Chris stated, what they're fighting against is really for the Supreme Court and, you know, the right to pass law and everything. And I really was thinking about this yesterday. I think the purpose, the reason there's a giant attack right now is that they're trying to invalidate, they're trying to fatally wound Trump so that he can't bring in new Supreme Court justices, et cetera. So whether that's going to work, I mean, I'm highly skeptical because he's made it up to this point. And I think people are really tired of the media pretending that it is some advanced form of thought or information, and instead it's just a propaganda machine. But here is, and I apologize for the robotic voice, but here's the clip that I found that explains matriarchy a little bit. And this is from Audiopedia. Kind of an obnoxious beginning, but here we go. One of the things it points out, which I believe has been established, is there has never been a matriarchy in human history.
Matriarchy is a social system in which females hold primary power, predominant in roles of political leadership, moral authority, social privilege and control of property at the specific exclusion of men, at least to a large degree. While those definitions apply in general English, definitions specific to the disciplines of anthropology and feminism differ in some respects. Most anthropologists hold that there are no known societies that are unambiguously matriarchal, but some authors believe except.
All right, so there was this idea that ancient Africa was matriarchal, and I've seen that. I've actually got a book that opposes that idea. There was an idea that humans had a peaceful background, that societies were run by women, and that at some point men took over, and that's when war and struggle was created. And I believe, if memory serves me, that the matriarchal society was also kind of a communist society. But so that has been disproved. There has not been a matriarchy. So is the West prepared to use its power of persuasion and disinformation, its propaganda wing, or its ability to persuade people who are functionally illiterate? I'm calling most people in the society functionally illiterate because most people don't read. And so they pick up their information more passively or from, they pick up pre-digested information. And so you see a lot of these women who are involved in this Women's March really don't even seem to know what's going on exactly. They're there. They don't like Donald Trump. They resented him talking about grabbing women's genitalia. And, you know, there's certain things that pretty much across the board, even Donald Trump doesn't defend in retrospect. But what the Women's March was about exactly, holding on to power, I guess, and what feminism stands for exactly, not even really clear except the empowerment of women. One author that I said that I was looking at said that feminism is hated, and I think feminism is generally hated by a lot of people in society. One of the reasons that it's hated is that it is a dominating philosophy. It's a dominating theory. It is a set of ideas that is meant to be brought in to a situation, and the power is supposed to shift to embrace this new, you know, revelation that women have been oppressed and now they have to be given the controls of power. But here's an idea. If you get into feminism, there's a notion in there women are better than men. Clearly, that women, because they're not as violent and because they're more loyal and because they give birth and nurture children and because they don't fight and they don't do domestic violence. And therefore, if they ran a country or a city, if they ran a state, if they ran the world, it would be a much better place because their women are not about ostentatious displays of wealth. They're not about struggling between each other to build up pointless, amounts of materialism, that they care about human beings, that they're emotional, that in this way of thinking, they're more rational because decide things from the heart. It was on and on. So what is the test of that? I don't know, since we haven't had a matriarchy, but I do believe that these principles are mistaken. And if you look out through history, you will find that there have been female leaders at various times, many of them queens in the ancient world, who were just as ruthless. And so that would be blamed on the society itself. So going forward, what do the feminists want? What is the impact of feminism? And I know that one place where you see a lot of matriarchy is in the Black community, because men have abandoned that community, and almost 75% of children are born out of wedlock there. So those children are raised in the matriarchy. And what is the impact of matriarchy upon these children? Well, they suffer, and I'm going to come back and read you some statistics that will, if you have not heard me read them on here before, you're going to raise an eyebrow. 728 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces AM 1450 523 1450. We'll be right back.
Luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. This is Bob. Good morning.
Hey, Bob. What's up?
Hey, well, these women are not representative of women. For example, angry Madonna is a girl, and you can't send her in to do a woman's job like Ileana Trump. Same thing with Barack Obama. He's a boy. You can't send a boy to do a man's job.
Bob.
Like, yeah.
Bob, did you want to save this for the – we're not on the air. You want to save this for the air?
Well, if you want, if you think it's good.
Sure. I'll put you on hold.
Okay.
We have Bob. And, Bob, you had some comments on feminism?
Yes, sir. I've been watching what's been going on, and I just think that these women, they're very angry. They've been very abused. And I'm kind of appalled that they would not be inclusive. They did not sanction pro-life women. So they're only representing themselves. And, you know, you need to have more of a heart towards what's going on in this world. But, for example, like Gloria Steinem or Madonna, I can't stand watching her on TV anymore. But these women are representing themselves. And they're mad. They're angry girls. They're not women. And you can't send a girl to do a woman's job. Same thing as you can't send a boy to do a man's job. For example, like Barack Obama is a boy. Donald Trump is a man. So that's why things are changing. But it's, you know, it's not bad. I mean, they're not violent, so that's good. So it's just an observation. I thank you, Kelly.
Thanks, Bob. All right, so don't send a boy to do a man's job. You know, it is kind of weird that Obama's desire when he got out of office was to, I think, have a TV show, be on a TV show, or have a TV show to run an NBA team. And there were a couple of other things, maybe be a professor again, but I think that his main goal is to be a community organizer again. That was his, I think it pretty much formed his worldview, but, you know, being on TV, I think, would be perfect for him because he does not have a lot of substance. He is a parrot of other people's ideas, and he doesn't really seem like a lot of this stuff he's ever thought about deeply to begin with. So, all right. So I had mentioned statistics, which you've heard before, but let me bring them up again, of fatherless. So if you're going to have a matriarchy, the women are going to run things. It's going to allow men to not be in the house. which, as we've seen today already, the welfare state opened the door for that long ago. And the most remarkable or the most obvious example is in the black community, where 75% of kids are born outside of the wedlock, and over 90% of children in black families will live without their father for a significant period of time because the black divorce rate is higher. And also the black abortion rate is 3 times the average. So it's kind of interesting. I would say all those are effects of the matriarchy, the rejection of the idea that you need a father to have a family. And 23% of U.S. children live in fatherless homes in 2014. In 2011, the poverty rate was about 50% in female-headed houses. So those are just a couple of the, you know, the number one driver of poverty in the United States is fatherlessness. It's female-headed houses. So you can't really escape these statistics because they're so extraordinary, they're so remarkable, and they're staggering, really. And so here's one of the things that I would like to propose is the idea that the government ought to promote families, including fathers. The government ought to promote marriage, and it ought to promote living with the children that you've created. Now you know, people who've grown up in this society are immediately going to react to a statement like that. How dare the government take a moral stand like that? It's none of their business. You can't legislate morality. Well, number one, I would say all legislation is an attempt to have more morality in the society. Law is moral, an attempt to establish morality through law, number one. And number two, why shouldn't the government try to influence human behavior in a way that creates more human happiness, less poverty? You know, people who grow up with both parents are on the average happier because they know where they came from. They don't, you know, this phenomenon of not knowing who your dad is and being tormented by it is fairly universal to people who grow up without a father. So, you know, I think the government ought to do it, and why not? I mean, you think about all of the idiotic things that this government has encouraged or, you know, kind of turned a blind eye to. So anyway, I'll come back and I'll read a few more statistics for you, but here's a little more Frank Sinatra for you. Luck be a lady, ironically. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. It's the 24th of January.
Luck, if you've ever been a lady to begin with, luck be a lady tonight.
All right, so just one of the things that I had mentioned yesterday was this proliferation, the saturation of feminism by Marxism or by philosophy. It's a philosophical movement. Marxism is, generally speaking, a failed attempt at either doing economics or government, which does not seem to slow anybody down in their enthusiasm for it. But when you apply it to human relations, then, you know, there's a lot of bad results, in my opinion, of course. And we do have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, this is Jesse.
Hey, Jesse, what's up? Good morning, and what's on your mind?
So you kind of, well, good morning, first of all, but you kind of struck a chord when you said that the government should go in there and provide some type of, you know, legislation for, in a sense, the creation of the family, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, what do you think?
And, well, I kind of disagree. You know, inside of myself as a Christian person, I kind of agree in a certain way, but I also believe that it's not the government's job to do that. So when I look at the environment that we live in, you know, you have, of course, men, women, and children. And of those three groups, the group that is not protected is the child.
Right.
And so what happens is that maybe the government should be in there and look at I don't have the statistics behind this or data behind it or whatever, but this is just kind of thinking off the cuff. But if there's a child, either through a divorce or a, you know, unwanted pregnancy, and then all of a sudden this woman's going to have the child, the government should go in there, and my belief that I just kind of like thinking about this is that they go in there and they should fight for that child and making sure that that child has, you know, food, water, clothing, education, you know, they should go in there and protect it.
Yeah, but so, I mean, aren't you doing exactly what you don't want somebody to do from another angle? You're turning the government into a parent, and it's very intrusive, and you're using you're basically giving people the opportunity to not be responsible, because no matter what, the government's going to come in and make sure that everything is okay for the kids.
Well, that's what the government is doing right now.
Exactly.
The welfare state that we have, it's basically the U.S. government, the state government or whatever, is going in there and saying, oh, you don't have a father no more, or you happen to have three or four children, and so therefore on welfare you're entitled to X amount of food stamps and all this other stuff, you know. And so what ends up happening is now the government is that de facto provider for that child.
Right.
When I believe it's almost like this. Let's say the child happens to belong to a very rich person. Let's say it happens to be George Soros. And George Soros is my daddy. And, you know, he doesn't want to claim, so I take him to court. And I file a paternity suit against him. And guess what? Before you know it, guess what? There's a possibility that I'll be getting X amount of support, you know, my mother would, right? Because of George Soros' paternity suit and everything else. It's documented he's the father and he should be paying for so much and everything else. The problem that happens is that the government has become that George Soros.
Right. So look,
of paternity.
We could talk about this all day, but let me ask you this. If the government is already doing stuff like this, which is actually encouraging people to be more irresponsible, why not turn it around and figure out a way to reward people for being responsible?
Well, that's, I totally agree. The point I was going to try to make is this. If the government is providing for a child that is, you know, not being taken care of by a father, then the government should turn around and now go after that father and you know, garnish his wages, you know, do everything it can.
We already do that.
Look,
we already do that. It's not working. We've got an incredible number of single parents, single mothers out there, and there's no social penalty for that. I got another caller. You want to sum up your point real quick?
Well, I think what the government needs to do is get out of the paternity and start going after these deadbeat fathers.
We already do.
And start hitting them everywhere.
Half of my practice in law involves this. It's already being done. The problem is much deeper than that. And, you know, I mean, so anyway, thanks for the call.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Kelly.
You bet. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, my name is Shane.
Shane, hey, good morning. Hope you're well. And what's on your mind?
Oh, topic of feminism. It's a hot issue with me.
All right, yeah, go ahead.
I agree with you completely when you brought up the Marxist aspect of it. If you look at them, they're not just looking for women's liberation and their rights, because they got that in the first and the second waves, right?
Yes.
So what they're doing is now they're trying to encompass all other groups. So they have the main voice, the main political power, main social power in the United States and in most Western cultures.
Right.
So when the women's liberation started burning out again, go over the gay movement. When the gay movement started, you know, when they started getting their rights and they got the right to marry and all that, then they took over Black Lives Matter.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Right. And it's all in the play of gaining power. And I don't think they actually have a true end goal at this point, because they're too scattered. But if they are a movement of equality, then I haven't seen one of them do this. What rights do they not have that men do? It's never been explained. This mentality of for the example, one of their slogans is teach men not to rape.
Yes.
Not that there's not laws that put these people in prison. It's and if you tell them that they should learn to defend themselves just in case, which is common sense in any dangerous situation in public, whether you're a man or a woman, they scoff at you and belittle you for being a man. And if they're about rights, look at what they do to the men's rights movement. Whenever men try to talk about men's and boys' issue, including, you know, things like the high homeless rate in the male community, high suicide rate, high male deaths in the workforce, they pull fire alarms, they threaten them, harass them. So for this to be a movement of peace and equality is such rubbish.
Yes.
And I don't understand how anyone can buy into this anymore. Because if you want equality, let's do it right across the board. You don't see them protesting to get the jobs roofing in July in Florida.
Right.
But you want 50%, you know, equal share in a Fortune 500 company. I don't see you trying to work in sewers.
Right. So, you know, what you see in these people, and it was on display in this last march, is a juvenile attitude from these women. They all act like they're babies that have fallen on the ground and need to be picked up. But they put on this tough persona. But if you listen to what they complain about, most of it is juvenile.
Oh, absolutely. Did you see the video of the woman at Yale screaming at a professor?
Yeah.
Because he had the audacity to say that you're an adult. You should be able to wear what you want as a Halloween costume.
Yes, I saw that.
This is starting from the ground up. This mentality you have raising these children.
You're breaking up. I'm going to have to let you go because we're not following you. But let's pick this up tomorrow, okay, because I'm out of time.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. All right, folks. Sorry about that. All right. So let's take a little break here, and then we'll have one last sprint to the end. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. My overall thesis about feminism I'll make when we come back.
Luck, let a gentleman see how nice a dame you can be.
All right, here's your fatherless statistics. 85% of all youths in prison come from fatherless homes, 20 times the national average. 85% of kids with behavioral problems, fatherless homes, 20 times the national average. 75% of all adolescents in chemical abuse, substance abuse centers, fatherless homes, 10 times the average. 71% of all high school dropouts, fatherless homes, 9 times the national average. 71% of teenage pregnancies, fatherless homes, 7 times the national average. Daughters without fathers, 711% more likely to have children as teenagers, 164% more likely to have premarital birth, and 92% more likely to get divorced. 90% of all homeless and runaway children are from fatherless homes, 32 times the national average. 63% of youth suicides are from fatherless homes, 5 times the national average. 80% of rapists with anger, fatherless homes, 14 times the average. Children in fatherless homes had 8 times the rate of maltreatment, 10 times the rate of abuse, 6 times the rate of neglect, 100 times the rate of fatal abuse, 40 times more likely for a preschooler to be sexually abused, 4 times the risk of poverty, 2 times the risk for obesity, 2 times the rate of infant mortality. Okay, so you want a matriarchy? That's what your matriarchy looks like. Now, whether you like it or not, you think that's a sexist comment? Are the facts sexist, my friends? 1/3 of American children are growing up without a biological father. In the last 50 years, the percent of children living with two married parents has dropped 22 points. During the same period of time, the number of babies born to unwed mothers jumped from 5% to 40%. And that's from 2011. And half of babies are now being born to single mothers by choice. So you've convinced a vast swath of American populace that fatherhood is irrelevant, that motherhood covers and overcomes fatherhood, that men, since men and women are the same, it would be ridiculous to suggest that a father brings something other than a mother could bring. But if that's true, how do you explain those statistics? So I see feminism as anti-male, as being selfish and self-centered. And if you're a feminist, this doesn't mean that, of course, that you have these qualities. But I think that there is a push in these directions. There's a push to blame men for all problems. There is an argument to dismiss to naysay the influence of fathers and of men. And I think that we're laying down the foundation for a fatherless generation that, if it continues, is going to destroy the society. Clearly, the society cannot live through those statistics. And it was about 4 years ago that children out of wedlock passed the 50th percentile for women 30 and below. So now it's 35 and below, almost outside of the breeding years that children would be 50 or more percent likely to come into the world with just a mother. Now, I would say that if a woman decides to have a child because she wants to be complete, she wants to be fulfilled, and she thinks that a father is irrelevant, that she is completely mistaken. And I believe I've come to the conclusion it's a form of child abuse to decide to have a child without a father, for a woman to do that. And it's a form of child abuse for a man to walk away from his responsibility for his children. So I think feminism is misleading, and it has harmed America, and I think it has especially harmed the ability for men and women to trust each other and to form a close and intimate relationship and create a happy home. Anyway, just my take on things. 523-1454 tomorrow. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. Hope you have a great day, and we'll see you back in 22 hours. Ciao.
I know the way you've treated other guys you've been with. Luck be a lady with me. A lady doesn't leave her escort. It isn't fair. It isn't nice. A lady doesn't wander all over the room and blow on some other guy's dice. Let's keep this party.